This is the Epilogue Audio Experience.
The views, thoughts and opinions expressed are the host's own and do not represent the views, thoughts and opinions of Epilogue Media Private Limited. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes and or entertainment purposes only. Listener discretion advised.
You know, our history is the same. I mean, we've lived together for centuries and we've been the same people, you know, with the same history, same culture, same stories, same folk tales, which same lullabies, you know. I mean, I think religion can never divide people. Religion is used to divide people.
India and Pakistan. When you hear these two names, what comes to your mind? Is it the India-Pakistan cricket match? Or is it the multiple battles that we have fought together? You know what comes to my mind? Our shared love for food, for culture, for art, and our heritage. Welcome to Being the Change on Epilogue Media. I am Rohan Thakkar, and on this episode, I'm here to talk about on how art can bring people together. How art can break boundaries, can break stereotypes, and burn the hatchet. To talk about it, I have with me someone very special. Someone from Karachi, Pakistan. Her name is Shima Karmani. She's an ace classical dancer and a social activist. You might have seen her in the super hit song Pasuri by Coke Studio. And that caught me to thinking, what is a person doing Indian classical dance in a Pakistani song? So to answer these questions, I have with me Shima ji.
Thank you, Ron. It is wonderful to be talking to you and to be connected across the border.
Yes.
Finally. Yeah.
So I've been very curious to know about Shima Karmani, primarily because she's a Bharatanatyam exponent and also learned several other dance forms. But what's very curious is that she has learned it in Pakistan, at a time when India and Pakistan were not the same. So how has it been the journey for you, and how has it been that you chose Bharatanatyam as a dance form to learn? What were your roots before all this began?
Okay. Well, Rohan, I actually do Bharatanatyam and Odissi as well.
Oh, wow.
You know, you might have heard of the dance form Odissi. Yeah.
Yes.
And of course, I do Kathak as well because I live in Pakistan. So that's that's the most, out of all the classical dance styles, that's the most accepted one in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So I think my exposure to Bharatanatyam actually came from my mother, who lived in Hyderabad, Deccan. And her family was living there when she got married. And so when we were young, we would visit with her, her family, her parents go to Hyderabad. And she would have an ustad coming to her house to teach Bharatanatyam. And then she would make little drawings herself and bring them back and practice at home here in Pakistan, back in Pakistan. So that was my actually first exposure, in a sense, to classical dance and to Bharatanatyam. She also used to learn sitar. In fact, both my aunts, my khalas, were also learning sitar and singing. So I had this kind of an exposure at a young age from my mother's family side. And then my guru here in Pakistan, Mr. Ghanshyam. Yes, so he had been a student at Almora of Uday Shankar's. So, you know, and this is pre-partition. So he had himself studied with Uday Shankar ji. And so he had what he taught me was like a bit of Bharatanatyam, bit of Odissi, bit of Kathak, the kind of genre that Uday Shankar had created, where, you know, he was reviving all these styles and trying to create something different. So and I loved Bharatanatyam when I was learning with Mr. Ghanshyam. And then when I did go to India to study further, I actually went to study Bharatanatyam because I just somehow it felt to me that that's the style I enjoy, I like. And I had an ear for Carnatic music somehow. I loved it. And yes, but then when I did get to India, I did learn Bharatanatyam with Leela Samson at Sri Ram Bhartiya Kala Kendra, which is in Delhi. And then when I came back in between, I realized that I will not be able to take this very much forward, because in Pakistan, there are no Carnatic musicians. So I thought that I'll always be only dancing to recorded music that I get from India, and that's such a bore. And so when I went back to study dance further, and I chose to do Odissi, because Odissi can be danced on the tabla, or even we have Pakhavaj players here, and it's more North Indian in the musical sense. And so I did that. But at the same time, right, I was learning Kathak also with Ram Mohan Ji in Delhi. And so I kept these three styles going constantly.
And which year was this?
So the first year was 1980. 83, the first time that I went. So from 83 till when I finally went for a scholarship in 89. So I had this ICCR scholarship, which I got in 89. And that's when I went for a longer time, 2 years.
And what was the perception for performance arts at that time? Well, in India, in Pakistan, the relations between India and Pakistan.
Yeah. I had been traveling to India in the late 70s and the early 80s also quite a lot, because I have a lot of family there. And so I used to go almost every year, sometimes twice a year. But when I actually went for a and stayed for like, you know, at a go a whole year and then at a go for another. So that's, I mean, I always had an incredibly positive feedback relationship with all the people I ever met in India. Never did I have any negativity. In fact, when I would go to extend my visa or, you know, to report, there would be a real excitement. Oh, a woman from Pakistan is learning dance and learning Bharatanatyam and learning Odissi. So there was a very nice feeling. When I came back in 1990 to Pakistan, after having been there for some time, my friends said, we want to see what you've been learning. You know, by then, Pakistan had changed, because by then, this was that decade where the military dictatorship, which was very Islamist. That was General Ziaul Haq's dictatorship. And he had tried to bring in all these very Islamic laws and a whole environment, which was very, very fundamentalist, basically, I would say. And so by the time I did get back, Pakistan had changed quite a lot and become very tough, very difficult for the arts, especially, because and for women. You know, because these were the two, in a sense, the two victims of this Islamization or fundamentalism. Yeah. So from then onwards, things did become very tough and difficult for women and for artists in Pakistan. And that continued, and it has continued, because you know, all that fundamentalism has kind of kept on increasing rather than decreasing, because the whole media, and then a generation grew up with those ideas. And I feel that now things have really changed quite a lot. But from the time that I was young in Pakistan, at that time, it was a more freer, open, accepting, liberal country.
I often see on social media, I get to you know, such images keep appearing about the before and after of a lot of places. Like I see Afghanistan, Iran, in the early 70s, 80s, 60s, they used to be so modern.
Absolutely. And even Karachi, you know, the city where I live, it was like, I mean, like Mumbai in that. And it was, you know, it was considered that we were twin cities, Bombay and Karachi.
Yes, and, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and the environment, the atmosphere, and it was also, the reason why it was so beautiful was because of its diversity and its pluralism and its multiculturalism, you know, and there was extreme diversity in this city, in specifically in the city of Karachi, because it was a port city, you know, it was connected to, and to an extent, believe me, it was known as, for years, it was known as the Beirut of this part of the world, of the East, you know, because it was so modern. In Karachi, we used to have many Parsis, like in Bombay. We had many Christians. In Christians, we had all the different sects, and we had Goanese, and we had you know, Portuguese, and their music and their culture. And of course, we had the a huge Hindu community, and we had so it was a it was such a mix of people, and the mix was of also of their cultures, and of course, we had the whole Bengali culture, which then we lost in 1971, you know, which was a very bad thing, because that Bengali culture also gave us, you know, the aesthetics and the and the music and the dance. I mean, in, at Ghanshyam school, where I was studying, almost all the musicians were Bengalis. All the composers, the music composers were Bengalis, because, you know, there was so much more of that in East Pakistan, which it was at that time till Bangladesh, and rather than in West Pakistan. So all of this was just our history, you know, it creates what we live in really at the present. And I always talk about the similarities that we have in our history, in our culture, in our literature, for that matter, you know, our stories, our families. I mean, imagine, I'm so connected with India. I talk on the phone with my friends and with my cousins every weekend, you know. Yeah, but unfortunately, for the last many years, we're not getting visas to get to India. Even this year, I mean, there's the, I've come, you know about SPIC-MACA, this convention, youth cultural convention that happens. So I've come, I think, about three or four times with the delegation of students to SPIC-MACA. And this time it's happening in Madras at the IIT in Madras. And but I don't think we will get visas, which is just so sad. Yeah.
It brings me to a question. What do you think, how, like we discussed it earlier as well. Art can bring people closer.
Yes.
But how do you think, how can it bring people closer?
You know, I think it does, definitely, I think that's one, arts are one element which really help people bond and connect, you know. For instance, let me take the example of this song, Pasuri. How amazingly it connected me to strangers in India. I mean, you know, out of the blue, somebody writes to me that I am living in Bangalore, and I heard this song, and I saw this woman in a sari in a bindiya, and how come this is in truly in Pakistan? Is this true that this is, you know?
You know, that was one of the primary reasons why I got curious to speak to you about it.
There you are, yeah. So it really, and so what is it? It's a music video. So it's a song, it's music, it's visuals, and it's audio. And it connected me, and it connected, I think, Pakistan and so to the so many parts of the world. But if we just talk about India, it was an incredible connection that happened between us. And from small towns in India, people have tried to connect with me and written to me. So you see, this is, I mean, we don't need to put it in words how it connects, how it bonds. You know, it's a bonding thing. And people say, oh, we felt so close and we could relate to you. And then they find out that I'm also a dancer, actually a classical dancer. So they relate even more. And there's a, yeah, I mean, it really brought in such incredible energies and such beautiful connections. And this is what I mean, that, you know, our history is the same. I mean, we've lived together for centuries, and we've been the same people, you know, with the same history, same culture, same stories, same folk tales, which same lullabies, you know. I mean, I think religion can never divide people. Religion is used to divide people. That's what I say. On its own, it doesn't divide, because who cares what religion you practice or what religion I practice, or whether I do practice any religion or not. You know, why should you care? But what are the other things that are connecting us, you know? It is that you see me dance that connects you. It is that you see me wearing a sari that it connects. I mean, you know, the similarities that we have. And if we nurture those, I think art, and those we nurture through art, no? Matlab, the music, the song, the theater. I've performed so often in India with my theater group. And wherever we've gone, it has really connected us, even, you know, in a very deep way. Because what do you do with your art? You manifest your aspirations, your dreams, your desires, and your sadness and your hopes and everything. And when the audience understands that and, you know, grasps it and feels connected with it, so we become one. We really become one. And I think that's how arts can do it. The only issue is, once our states and our governments decide to allow artists to travel freely between the two countries, you know, that is what holds us back. Otherwise, you know, I went on a tour of East Punjab with a wonderful social activist. His name was Satya Paul G, who has recently passed away. Yes. And we had an association, fraternity of South Asians for Peace or something like that. So he invited us to do this tour of 12 towns or cities of East Punjab, 12. In about 15 days, we did that, 20 days till we reached Delhi. And wherever we went, and it was obviously the play that we brought was also about this division that has been made between us, you know, and it was set. In fact, it was a play written by an Indian, Asghar Wajahat, and it's about set on the eve of partition, and it is about a Hindu lady who gets has refused to leave her home in Lahore because she doesn't understand here what is this partition and why does she have to leave, and she says she's not going, and the people in Lahore nurture her as a loved neighbor that they've had, and you know, but then of course this evil thing called fundamentalism finds its root. And, you know, things like that. So it was, and that tour, we realized that, you know, all our hopes, all our aspirations are same. Whichever town you went to, people would ask, is anybody here from Lahore? Is anybody here from that city? And, you know, I left my home there. And, you know, because it is the tragedy of partition, I think, will continue for many generations to come.
Yes. I feel that we are parts of the same coin.
Absolutely. Just that
divided by a ridge. But the rest, everything is the same.
Bilkul. Of course, we are the same.
I wanted to come to your group, Tehreek e Nizwan.
Yes.
What has been this initiative about, and why does this exist?
Right. So, first, let me tell you what is Tehreek. The word is Tehreek, and what is Nizwan? Huh? So, Tehreek is the Persian word for movement, you know, like a social movement that takes place.
Right.
Yeah? And Niswa is women. So so that's Arabic word for women. So it's Tehreek in women's. So literally it kind of translates into women's movement. Yeah. And so, I mean, I had thought of creating this kind of a platform when I realized that I live in a very patriarchal society. And as a woman, I found that patriarchy so oppressive. And as an artist, I found it even more oppressive. So, you know, a woman and an artist. And I felt that wherever I went, there were women who would be writing poetry. There were women who were artists, but they never got a platform to project their creativity. You know, because everywhere it was so male dominated, whether it's the arts councils or whether it's any other platform, they were all heavily male dominated, and women would feel very, that they are too scared to come and speak out in the open. Then also because of my politics, which is kind of left wing politics, and I was trying to work with women of the working class. You know, in the women who go to factories and warehouses to do their jobs, fisheries and things. There I felt that there were trade unions, but they were totally male dominated, you know. And if a woman wanted to speak up, she'd be too scared. So I just felt that I need to create this platform where women can be nurtured and trained to be self-confident and to find the dignity in their bodies and in themselves to speak out and assert themselves. So this was the initial reason for creating this platform. And while doing all of this work, I realized that the times that I would connect with my audience, which is a working class female audience, or even the male audience, the time I would connect with them would be when I was performing something, more than speechifying and giving lectures and talks, because, you know, there's not that kind of literacy in this country that everybody can sit and listen to a paper being read out and things like that. But when it's storytelling, when it's a performance and you're singing and you're dancing and you're showing characters that people can relate to, that had such power and magic. And I understood that performing arts was one way to actually carry forward rights messages, rights, human rights, women's rights, marginalized people. And so I decided that let's do that. Let's make Tehreek e Nisswan a cultural group. And so that is what we did. We made it into a cultural group. And so we use all forms of cultural activity, where, you know, the dastan goi, kissa kahani, singing, music, dance, theater, dialogue, poetry. And we kind of, you know, and this is also interesting because for us, it's a way to preserve and carry forward our traditional arts as well, you know, which are so easily get wiped off because, you know, because there's, you know, how the state represses folk music and folk arts and even. So, you know, so we can connect with them and we bring in folk artists also, and we try to connect with them, and then we try to preserve musical instruments, musical genres and things like that. So basically, we've become a performing arts group now. For the last 50 years almost, we work as a performing arts group. But our lens are basically, first, I would say they are feminist, because that is our prime motive, that to create feminist equality, to create gender equality. And then, of course, we also have this political lens, where we look at things to raise political consciousness of the working class, the peasants, and to connect with them so that we are not elitist. We're not talking about just a certain section of society. We are talking about masses. And I think another thing that I could point out here is that something that I've always been my concern is that ordinary people must have access to these art forms. Which, you know, in our countries like ours, where there's such, so much poverty and such parity between the different classes, though I feel it is less in that sense in India, that when I would go to a music concert and come back in a bus, there would be lots of other people from the audience coming back in the bus. But in Pakistan, the audience that would go to a music concert would never travel in a bus. They would all be, you know, because we don't have that facility in a sense. And it may be the, you know, it's maybe it's you know, the classes would be defined in another way, the way it functions, the society functions. But I feel that ordinary people must have access to these arts. Why should they not? So what we did through Tehreek-e-Nisma, and that I would like to share with you all, is that what something like what our friend in India, Safdar Hashmi, used to do, like take theater to the people. You know, so that's what we also do. We call it our mobile theater. So we don't call it street theater, because actually in dictatorships, you can't literally go and provide on, perform on the streets.
Yeah, like Nukkad Natak.
Bilkul. Nukkad Natak, I think. That is what then we started doing. And we do a lot of that. In fact, our focus is on that. And every month we are performing somewhere or the other. And so in communities, in low-income areas, you know, we go to the fishing village and we would perform there, and we'd go to small villages, small towns, or even the slums the in and around Karachi and all over Pakistan. So we made, we called it our mobile theater, Tehreek-e-Nisma mobile theater, and we make ourselves mobile. We go to those people who cannot come to us, do not come to watch theater or listen to dance and music and things like that. And this has been an amazing experience, because through this, we are also connecting with the ordinary people of the country, you know, and so we are, so our stories emerge from them. I mean, we take them one story, we get, they watch it, then they give us their feedback, then they start talking. We have, after every performance, we have a dialogue. So it's not only that we are going to perform. Our aim is to create a dialogue. You know, like when we were talking, the purpose of these arts in terms of bonding people, or whether it is across borders or it is within your own country situation. So we are bonding, and that's what the purpose is of. And that has really been an amazing thing. And that is what has led to us to be able to do incredible thing called Aurat March, which we started 8 years ago, that we, you know, women would come out on the streets and talk about their rights and their demands. And so it's all because, you know, of all these years of work in different localities, different areas, that one has created this environment that women now feel that they can talk about themselves and about their issues.
And how is it perceived by the other group that for them, like for them, this activity is being initiated? Like they are the ones who need to hear this. So how do they perceive? Do they perceive with an acceptance, level of acceptance, or is it with retort, or is it with sarcasm? How is it like?
So I would say, honestly, it's both. It's a bit of both. I mean, on the one hand, we obviously get a huge amount of friendship and positivity and connections. You know, when women hear their story and they feel, oh, this is my story, there's obviously a lot of solidarity that emerges. But yes, of course, there are people who are against us, who find this objectionable. And but you must realize that who are these people who are against that? They are those who want to maintain the oppressive status quo. They don't want this change. I mean, they are the ones who want to keep the patriarchy going because it serves their interest. And so it's very easy to target us and to divide women by saying, oh, these women, they are Western oriented. That's one way they target us. which is not so. We are very traditional women, and some of us may be educated in the West, but that does not make us Western women, you know. In fact, I think a lot of women, people, students, even I've seen that, even if you take the example of students in India, but you know, when you go to the West to start, you start understanding and the appreciation of your own culture so much more, because you feel that you need that identification, you know. So there is an appreciation that comes. So, I mean, I don't take that criticism at all. I feel that that's a very ridiculous criticism. The other way to criticize us is the easiest way is to say that this all of these ideas are against our traditions and against our religion. You know, so, you know, as I said earlier, religions are used everywhere, always, to divide people, to create, unfortunately, used to create hatreds between people rather than create love and understanding. So, yes, so as I said, there are obviously people who are against us, who then try to put obstacles in our way. I mean, initially it was the state and the government. They would say, oh, you're not allowed to go. You need permissions. You go to the police office, get the permission. You go to the commissioner's office. You know, those kind of bureaucratic hurdles. Now that is definitely much less. I mean, you know, since the military dictatorships have ended, that has also become easier in that sense for us. There's more openness. But then people have become so fundamentalist, huh? Because all these years have the ideas have seeped into people, and they can turn around and say, why are the women not wearing an ordni? Why are they not wearing a chador? Why are they not wearing a dupatta? Whatever. You know, all sorts of things. One has to fight it. Struggle at many levels and on many fronts.
What about the younger generation? They are very open. They are very much exposed to the world, much more than the previous generation, where, of course, thanks to the internet, the Gen Zs are born with it.
Yes.
What has been your experience working with them, or, you know, their outlook towards communities?
So generally, I find that the younger generation is wonderful to work with. But at the same time, I would say that our education system has been totally destroyed. So in the younger generation, that is now like, for instance, those who are now 15, 14, 15, 16, 17, there's no, or one can't say no, but there's very little of holistic education. You know, there's people haven't read literature. People haven't seen art films. These kids, they just got their TikToks and their gadgets, and their aim. And they're very materialist, because life is so now in Pakistan. It's a very, it's actually the fabric of society has been quite destroyed, and the economics are shattered. Mm. Prices are soaring. The kind of food I could put on my table, I think twice before I go and buy fruits and nuts or things, because they're so exorbitant, you know. So these young kids, their interest is, let's find a job in Dubai, let's get a scholarship to Europe. And they're constantly doing that. They're trying to get away. And so there's lack of interest in your own history or your own culture, because you're so fed up with life in this country. And then for girls especially, they're so fed up of being told that this is how you must dress, and this is what you must not do, and why are you looking at a boy, and why are you dancing, and why are you singing, and you know, it is extremely oppressive. So I understand that the young generation's desire is to, if you go to the university and ask the students, what is your aim in life at this moment, all the hands that will be put up is, we want to leave the country. We want to get out. We want to go abroad. You know, it's becoming difficult to handle home. Yeah. So it's quite sad. But of course, that doesn't mean that there's nobody who is interested, or, you know, I'm talking about both the pictures, both sides of the coin. There are young people, but there are very, very few those who would take up classical music. For very, very few. I used to have more students in my dance class 20 years ago than I have today. You know, because today there's the value of classical dance or classical music is not there in the minds of the either the parents of that generation or the younger kids of this generation.
Yeah. Also, a lot of westernization has happened. So their affinity towards western music or western dance has also increased.
You're right. Absolutely.
And we see this in this part of the world as well.
When I'm invited to some educational institute, for instance, a school, you know, it's an annual event. We want you to be our chief guest or something like that. And I go happily to see what they're doing. And believe me, I've almost never, maybe once or twice, but I almost never seen them produce on stage a play or a performance related to our history or our literature. It's always the Sleeping Beauty or, you know, and that's so sad because we have so much. It's not that we don't have, literature of our own that should be brought to the young generation.
We
copy a lot of Bollywood, you know. I mean, so they would say, "Oh, Ma'am Shima, you must come. We've taught our student dance." And I say, "Oh my God, what am I going to do?" And obviously, what I go and see is that they're dancing on some Bollywood song, you know, and trying to make the moves that you see on
the movies. I was mentioning to you earlier that we had a conversation on a podcast, Rangmanch, which is hosted by Padmashri Bhavana Somaya. We had the son of Shashi Kapoor, late Shashi Kapoor, on the show, Kunal Kapoor. He is the one who runs Prithvi Theatre in Bombay.
Runs it now.
Yes, yes. We had a very interesting conversation where he said that when India got partitioned or India gained its freedom, the focus was entirely on science and the progress. Somehow the arts got sidelined, and we see the repercussions today where the old traditions and the art, the culture, somehow it got lost in the time. And I think actions like these, it can rekindle that love for the art.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, if somebody can say that of India, you can imagine it that much more percent of it for Pakistan, you know, because in India, you still had somebody like Maulana Azad, who actually said to Nehru, set up these cultural centers. The ICCRs were initiated by Maulana Azad because he was such a literary man. And, you know, he was a religious scholar, but much appreciation of the like so many others of that time. But here we didn't have that at all. In fact, here we had this added issue that to come out as different from India, and arts was totally kind of banished from our cultural landscape, you know, because, in India, there was still classical music and you still had sitarists and dancers and all of that. But initially in Pakistan, it was totally banished. I was just saying, and somebody like Bade Ghoram Ali Khan, who came to Pakistan, who was born in this part of the world. So he came in 47. He came to Pakistan, said, "Oh, I'm so happy that now I can live in my own town and in my own vatan," and went back because he realized that he can't. I mean, Radio Pakistan was not allowing him to to sing what he wanted to sing. So you have that. Then even somebody like Kurutulain Haider, such a incredibly great Urdu writer, came to Pakistan and went back. She actually wrote to Nehru to get special permission to come back because she just realized that Pakistan is a cultural desert at that point. That is what it was. It was a total cultural desert.
It brings me to a question that, of course, science is important, progress is important, technology is important, economic stability is also important. But what does art give a person that everything else cannot?
You know, I think basically why art is important is because it opens up our imagination. It allows us to fly as high as we want to fly. For women, I think arts are important. And there are many ways that I find arts important. For women, arts are important. For instance, you know, it is through dance that I found this confidence in my body, the dignity in my body. I think arts are also important because they bring you your identity. They give you that self-confidence, that strength. For me, arts has been something that's given me so much strength. I mean, you know, that I feel I can do anything. You know, it gives you courage, basically, makes you strong. And then, of course, through art, because arts touches you, you know, performance art touches you in so many different ways, touches you at a deep emotional level, touches you at an intellectual level, touches you at a visual level, at an audio level, almost at a sensual level. So I feel that it is one of the things which is the most holistic way to get across to somebody. You know, you don't necessarily have to talk, but you do a certain movement and that person understands that you're talking about love, or you give a certain abhinaya look and, you know, that person does not, you know. But So, I mean, I think it is so powerful and it creates that power in you. So I would say it kind of empowers me. That's why it's important for me.
There's a question that has been irking me for a while now. Earlier mentioned that you have practiced three different forms of dance, Bharatanatyam, Kathak, Odissi as well. Mastering one itself takes a lifetime. How did you manage to do three of them?
Let me be very honest. No, I haven't mastered any one, even one of these forms. I haven't mastered them. But because, you know, I looked at it in this way that I live in Pakistan where none of these forms really exist. And I mean, if I am doing Bharatanatyam, people say, oh, this is not Pakistani. If I'm doing Odissi, they'll say, oh, this is not Pakistani culture. If I'm doing Kathak, they'll say, oh, this is Mujra culture. This is what the, you know, red light women do. What is all of this? So I have learned these different forms with this view or with this understanding or with this knowledge that I have to create my own form. I don't have to be a master. I mean, of course, if I was living in India, I would have tried to master one of these forms. And as you said, it takes a lifetime to master any even one. But that was not my purpose. I tried to learn as much as I could of the form. And now I want to create something which people here will find relevant, because I feel that it's, for me, it was not about preserving these forms. For me, it was, that was not my interest, because this is, my interest was to learn something and create something which is relevant to my people, to me and my society. And so these forms helped me with that. You know, I use Urdu poetry because, you know, as you know, there's a lot of poetry in Urdu. I don't do Sanskrit poetry. I don't do only bhajans. I don't do only kirtans. I do them when I want to, and there are occasions to do that as well. But my purpose is to bring the art form of dance to the people, the classical form, and make them understand that this is also an art form. Dance is not something that you can thrash. You know, and say, okay, it's hopeless, it's useless, it's exhibitionism of the body, and it's for male titillation. No. You know, so my purpose of learning these different forms. In fact, I even learned a bit of Kathakali. Wow. Because I think it gives me an added, yes, because I'm creating stories. I'm telling stories. And to tell story, if I want to use a Kathakali movement, it's brilliant. And if I want to use a very soft movement, I can bring in a Mohiniyattam movement, which I also did a workshop in, you know. So I feel that, yes, I mean, let's be holistic and let us be more creative.
That's wonderful. And you also received an award recently for the same, to bring this awareness in the people of Pakistan. So I would love to know a little bit more about it. You received a presidential award for this.
Yes, yes, yes. So for the first time in all these 75, 76 years of Pakistan, the first time there's been an award in appreciation of the art of dance. So for me, it is not an award that I feel that it is for me. I feel it is for the fact that we have finally recognized that this is also a subject and this is also an art form. So that's why I'm very proud that it came through me. But the fact, because we have been in denial of it always, huh? I mean, from the beginning, Pakistan has been in denial of assuming and adopting the dance as part of its cultural. They say, no, no, no. Because, you know, we've always tried to identify with the Arab culture. We said, no, 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 the Indian culture is, we will not identify with. Why? Because it is related to Hinduism. We have to identify with another culture which is related to our religion. But cultures are not about religions. You know, cultures are about so many other things. You know, about language, about life, about style, about food, landscape, geography, climate, hundreds of things. You know, customs, traditions, stories, literature. So I've never understood how people can define art and culture through religion. And I've always said, okay, well, how can, you know, let's talk a little about this peace issue. When this whole thing started, I mean, we've always been at war with each other, right? Mm-hmm. Right from the beginning, India and Pakistan. And then this nuclearization started, right?
Yes.
And then at that point, when they said, oh, Pakistan has made the bomb. So this is the first Islamic bomb. Mm. And then, of course, there was the Hindu bomb, yes, which you have made. So, I mean, and I used to think, even at that time, but the Islamic bomb, will it not affect the Muslims who are living in a certain area? Is it going to choose the non-Muslims to destroy them and kill them? Or vice versa, will the Hindu bomb only choose to kill Muslims? How can you define these things, you know, in this way, through religion? So I totally oppose these kind of definitions. And I'm very anti dividing art and culture on religious lines.
It's wonderful. It just goes to show that art brings people together irrespective of where you are placed.
Absolutely.
What your thinking is.
Absolutely.
It's about bringing a oneness in our society and culture, and bring cultures together. And I think this episode,
and to create, make us better human beings.
Absolutely.
Right? Make us better human beings.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I feel this episode has been a testament of talking about what culture can do to one and how we can bring people together. And for that, thank you so much, Shimaji, for taking out the time and talking with us here in India.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to speak to you and to so many others in India. And I would just say that my last thoughts would be that kaash ke hum ek ho jaye, ek tarah se kam as kam mille ek dusre se, that we can meet each other, we can connect with each other, we can share with each other, because I sincerely feel that we are one and the same. And I do hope that these enmities, these hatreds that have been created between us, कि वो खत्म हो जाएं, you know, ताकि प्यार के साथ हम लोग रहें मिल करके.
Do you think art is capable to break and defeat the purpose of war? Is it capable to bring people together? If yes, do let me know your thoughts. This is Being the Change. I am Rohan Thakkar, and we'll keep coming back with more such insightful episodes. Till then, make sure you are subscribed to us, so that you get notified when we come next. Till then, Goodbye.